He fell to his side, his hands grasping for support, his head banging against one of the stays on the ship's hull. His sight began to adjust to the sunlight, and he heard a familiar voice.
"The merchant sold you."
He blinked and rubbed at his eyes, coughed and looked up. The warrior's identity seemed to assemble in Vali's mind from a collection of parts. The long, deep scar running from the forehead to the lip. The massive body, bigger than any man he had ever seen. The tattoos covering every inch of his flesh in scenes of battle and destruction. The pelt of the white bear draped over him.
"Remember me, prince," said Bodvar Bjarki. "You said you wouldn't forget."
Chapter 33. An Explanation. The journey north felt like a dream to Adisla. The midnight sun turned the sea to boiling blood as it dipped towards the horizon, and when it rose again, it cast crystal shards into a sky of fragile blue. Sea mists came and went, the coastal mountains looming and then fading away, massive but fleeting. The temperature dropped as they moved up the coast, not to freezing, though ice was visible on the mountaintops, but to a grey, numbing cold. There was no true darkness, no rest from the leering of the Danes. Only the strange foreigner with his filed teeth and his drum seemed to stand between her and them. She had no oar to row, no sail to work, and, huddling terrified at the prow of the ship, she was frozen. The man with the drum tried to help, but his attempts to hold her were unpleasant. He was ugly, frightening, and stank of fish, though there was no lust in what he did. He just put his arms around her and squeezed. She shrugged him off.
"It is normal," he said. "Be cold, then."
He brought her food, fish from the ship's pot. Boiled reindeer hunted and cooked when they stopped to camp. He was a dead shot with his little bow, a curious squashed-looking thing. The reindeer he brought back to the boat had just one arrow in it, embedded behind its ear. There had been no stressful, wounded chase for the creature, and the meat was tender and lovely. It was the foreigner who slept next to her in an improvised tent on the beaches, keeping her from sleep as he watched her with those strange blue eyes, but keeping her from harm, too, with the broad knife he kept at his belt. Soon the midnight sun turned from the side of the ships to behind them. They moved among islands that seemed no more than mountains rising from the water, past immense bays and wide silver beaches, where sea eagles wheeled against brilliant skies. Great pine forests stretched up huge slopes, and where the mountains parted, there were glimpses of vast green plains. The ends of the earth were supposed to be this way, and as the fog swept over the boat, she wondered if this was the road to Niflheim, the misty hell she had learned about at her mother's knee. The lands of men were called Middle-earth for good reason. There were other areas, realms of gods and giants beyond their own, and mortals had no place there. Was that where the longship was going? Harik came and sat next to her. He hadn't spoken to her for the whole voyage, but now he was bored. The ship was under sail in an easy wind. Most of the crew were sleeping, and he had nothing to do. He held her face by her chin and turned it towards his. Then he glanced towards his men. None was paying them any attention. He let her go.
"I miss my wife," he said.
Normally Adisla would have found his thick accent and mangled words funny. At Ekund, they'd been visited by an entertainer who did a very good impression of Danes, and Harik reminded her of him with his sing-song Norse. Now she just found him grotesque.
"You should bring your bodyguard. You won't take me without a fight, and you are old and frail."
The king laughed.
"To talk to,"
he said. I need to talk. The company of warriors is a glorious thing, but men need softer speech too, don't they? Well, I do. Do you know why you're here?
I took it that you meant to sell me.
You're already sold, in a manner of speaking, he said. Or rather, exchanged, though it seems to me an uneven bargain.
Arisla looked at him.
Harik wasn't a coarse or unpleasant man. In fact, there was something quite fatherly about him. Not her father, but the father she wished she'd had. She hated him, though. He, or his men, had killed her brother, stolen her from her homeland, and sentenced her mother to death. Still, she wanted to discover her fate, so decided to be as civil as she could, which meant she said nothing.
You're to be swapped for my son, he said, although I wonder why I'm bothering. Perhaps I should have appointed you my heir. Are you any good as a sea captain? Can you wield a sword?
Not among my talents, said Adisla.
You can't be any worse than him. He was sent on a raid to the islands at the world's edge. He ended up here. That really does take a special sort of stupidity. I say go west. He finishes up just about as far east as it's possible to go.
He was captured?
Yes, and by people who couldn't catch a cold. The whale people have got him. Can you believe that? Nothing more than a sharpened reindeer antler between the lot of them, and they've taken him hostage. He was shipwrecked on his way up the coast north. Went too far up, got caught in the wrong current. One of two survivors, apparently. One of whom, biggest berserker I've ever seen, shows up at my court with my boy's sword and this whale wizard. I ask this berserker, Bodvar Bjarki, what a disciple of Odin of the White Bear is doing getting captured by a bunch of icicle farmers, and he murmurs something about sorcery. Says they heard a rumor of sorcerer's gold and went chasing it, which in itself beggars belief.
You look for him yourself, said Adisla. Have you no champions to do it for you?
Harik laughed. I'm an old-fashioned king, not one of this new breed, more at home with the inky priests of new gods than a sword. My problem, my solution. And besides, I'm afraid of what the boy might say to anybody who rescues him. He could disgrace himself further.
Is he so big a fool?
Why would he be here if he wasn't? Sorcerer's gold! If I had a piece of silver for every rumor of sorcerer's gold I've heard, then I wouldn't need any sorcerer's gold. These people haven't got combs for their hair, let alone gold. Even if it does exist, couldn't he hear the warning in the name? Sorcerer's gold! That's not little children's gold or farmer's gold. It's sorcerer's gold. I wouldn't be surprised if they had just untied a wind knot and blown him onto the rocks for his cheek. Anyway, this berserk tells me they've dragged my boy halfway across the world, and the blubber bashers want something in return.
What?
You. If it weren't for the shame, I'd let him freeze his nuts off for 10 winters up here.
How do they even know me?
Harik nodded towards the reclining whaleman, who was watching them with half an eye.
Ask him. If he'll tell you, he certainly won't tell me. The deal is, I take him to Rogaland. He identifies you. I take you up here. I get my idiot son back. Everyone happy.
He looked at her face.
Well, almost everyone.
The whale man had closed his eyes and began to snore. Harik eyed him with contempt.
They're idiots, his people. They pay tribute to three kingdoms that they move through after reindeer, so no wonder they're poorer than dirt. Do they do anything about it? Do they go raiding or fight to keep what they've got? No. I tell you this. Any Finn or Swede who came knocking on my door asking for tribute would be going home with more than a whalebone comb for his pains.
And yet, one whaleman walks into your court, and you risk your men in war with the Rigir, leave your court in the hands of vassals, and sail to the ends of the earth, just because he asks you to.
My son is my son, said Harik, for better or worse.
Adisla looked out of the ship. The landscape was flatter here, a rusty shore of rocks above the grey sea. Above that, a strip of green. Harik continued,
Anyway, when we get my boy back, we'll give our blades a nice wetting, piss it up for a couple of days if they've got anything worth drinking, and then head back.
You seem like a nice girl. I'll take you as a bed slave. I'll try to avoid letting the crew have you, if it's possible.
Very kind, said Adisla.
And practical. Giving you to them makes as much trouble as it stops. They'd be fighting like dogs over a bone.
Harik wasn't being unpleasant. He thought he was genuinely doing her a favor by offering to claim her for his own. Adisla swallowed and looked out to sea. The courage to take her own life had failed her, so she had to accept whatever was coming. She thought of the ruin of Ekund, and couldn't help but taunt him.
"Let's hope the whale people are not as fierce as the Rigir," she said. "You have only 60 men. With 80, you couldn't take our farms."
Harik's face darkened.
"There was the hand of sorcery in that," he said. "As we were told there would be. That's why we took you instead of the prince."
"The same sorcery the berserk muttered about?"
Harik smiled.
"Very like it."
She could see he liked her wit, took it for good humor. She found it difficult to believe that he couldn't see the hate that was in her heart. They were approaching an island, a long black hill rising out of the flat sea. The sun seemed to reach out to it in a tongue of fire across the water, marking a path to lead them in. Harik went on.
"There is something protecting Prince Vali."
He nodded at the whaleman.
"He wanted the prince, but seemed to know we wouldn't get him. You were second best."
A noise was coming across the water, a rhythm different to the creaking of the ship, or, had anyone been rowing, the beat of oars. It was faint but insistent, and Adisla recognized it as the rhythm the whale man had used to pull her from the sea. It was pulsing towards them across the flat water now, like the heartbeat of some gigantic beast.
"How can I be important to him? I'm a farmer's daughter."
The whale man looked up, his pale eyes focusing on her, his little white teeth gleaming in a row as he smiled and jabbed a finger at her.
"Wolf trap," he said.
Chapter 34 From the Fog. Vali was thinking, even as he fell against the boards. They had one free wolfman, and 4 less deadly but still unencumbered hands. It was an unenviable position to be in against Bodvar Bjarki and his crew. but if they allowed themselves to be tied up or otherwise immobilized, they were done for. Bragi stood cursing beside his upended barrel. He was moving like an old man waking after a long sleep. The wolfman was nowhere to be seen. Veles was wearing a smile that looked as if it had been cut into his face with a knife, shrugging as if asking for understanding. Vali felt angry and betrayed. He had looked up to the man, wished he was his father. Not Orthon. Harik, nor even Forkbeard would have stooped to such a deceit.
"Tie them," said Bodvar.
A man came forward with a rope. Time seemed to slow. One of Bodvar Bjarki's men peered into the wolfman's barrel as Vali heard Bragi come to the same conclusion he had in the warrior's more straightforward manner.
"Bollocks to that!"
Bragi took a stiff step forward and cut off the head of the rope man. Bragi had his sword, thought Vali. Unbelievably, he had got his sword into his barrel. There was a noise halfway between a vomit and a scream from Vali's left, and a guttural, crunching sound. The man looking for Felek had found him. Bodvar Bjarki didn't have his weapon out, but almost before the head of his crewman had hit the bottom of the boat, he stepped forward and delivered a blow with his fist. Bragi flopped to the boards, as though he'd had all the bones knocked out of him. Then Vali saw the giant coming for him. He tried to dodge, but Bodvar Bjarki didn't just have the size and strength of a bear, he had the speed of one. He picked Vali up by an arm and a leg and smashed him down. Vali fell badly, smacking his shoulder, but he quickly regained his feet. Bjarki was bearing down on him again. The prince saw the realities of the situation in an instant. He was on his way to an enemy, Forkbeard or Harik, it didn't matter. He was valuable goods. Bjarki lunged for him, but he rolled away and ran for the stern of the ship. He put his foot on the rail and turned to face the berserk.
"Call off your men, or I will—"
He didn't get a chance to finish the sentence. Bjarki leapt at him. Vali had no choice. He jumped over the side. He heard the berserk curse as he missed Vali by a fingernail. The cold rushed at Vali, crushing the breath from him. He gulped salt water and was gripped by terror. His time in the mire had seeped into him, and he now had a terrible dread of drowning. He had to fight to calm himself, to allow himself to swim as he could instead of panicking in the water. It wasn't easy. His limbs were cramped from the barrel, but a flood of fear washed much of the stiffness away, and he began to swim. The swell meant that sometimes the boat was the height of two men above him, sometimes two below. It was coming about, side on to him. As the water lifted him, he concentrated to clear his mind, and he saw it was a snekke, not as sleek or as quick as a drakkar, but it could have 20 pairs of oars and maybe even carry a relief crew. They couldn't fight that many, but he did have one bargaining counter. He was wondering if he would even get to use it when he heard a voice shout from the ship.
"Get back on the boat, Gutprins!"
It was Bjarki, throwing him a rope. It hit the water next to him, but he didn't take it, even though he desperately wanted to. He screamed as loud as he could.
"Not until I have your oath! You will not try to tie us or kill us!" "You're in no position to ask for oaths."
"Yes, I am," shouted Vali. "If I drown, where is your ransom?"
"Drown, then."
Bjarki went to turn away, but Veles appeared beside him. For a few moments, Vali lost sight of them. Then the berserk was calling to him again.
"You have my oath, as you requested. And you'll kill any man who does try to tie me or my friends while we are on your ship."
Vali couldn't be sure he saw Veles shrug, but he thought he did.
"You've learnt something of bargaining, prince," shouted the merchant. "Your oath! No hand raised against me or my friends!"
"That too!" shouted Bjarki.
The cold shot painful spasms into Vali's limbs, and he had to concentrate very hard to make his frozen hands take the rope. Then he was being pulled in and up over the side. Bragi sat where he had fallen, blinking and holding his jaw. Feleg was in a snarling standoff with three spearmen. Bjarki came forward and said in a low, almost confidential voice,
"You've got your bargain, Prince. You wouldn't have died anyway, none of you. The old boy's part of the deal, and I intend to save your wolfman for where people can see me kill him."
"Where are we going?" said Vali.
"Back to Forkbeard," said the berserk. "You are the price of my freedom. That and a good whack of compensation."
"It was dishonourable to swear to that," said Bragi.
"I'm meant for death in battle," said Bjarki. "Not at the end of a rope."
"The king is entitled to compensation for any ransom he has to pay," said Veles. "And it will be a good one, because this is a prison of Hemming, king of the Danes."
"We escaped," said Vali.
"Do you really think so?" said Veles. "Or was that for the benefit of spies? This way, Hemming gets to sell you to Forkbeard. Everyone else thinks you went there under your own steam. A neat solution, wouldn't you agree?"
"I will kill you, Veles," said Vali. "Be assured of that." The merchant shrugged.
"I think you are suffering from shock at your own stupidity.
Don't blame me. Blame yourself. I am a merchant and a fixer. I buy and sell things according to their worth.
You gave yourself to me when you came to Heitabir, unprotected."
"You were my friend," said Vali. The merchant snorted.
"I had enough of the friendship of your peoples. When you burnt my home in Rerik," he said.
Bjarki butted in.
"Do I have to kill him? Or are you going to tell him to behave himself?" he said,
nodding towards Bragi, who was getting to his feet.
"He's part of the prize, so it'd be a shame to lose him."
Vali gestured for Bragi to be calm. "You have a sudden concern for profit," said Vali. "Has this merchant infected your thinking?" The berserk spat.
"I have none," he said. "As long as I can eat and stay dry, then riches don't concern me. Cattle die, kindred die. But I know one thing that never dies, the glory of the great deed. Does not the Lord Odin tell us this? My prize is renown and the fulfillment of oaths, which is why, when we come to dry land, I shall kill your wolfman. He is a mighty warrior, and the man who kills him will be praised down the centuries."
"I'm not interested in the wolfman."
"So what are you interested in?" "That girl. Forget her. Harik has given her to the whale people for his son."
"What do you mean?"
Bjarki looked at him and laughed. "I mean, she is Domin's bride by now."
"Speak plainly."
"The whale men will have used her for their magic. But why should I tell you any more? My oath concerns keeping you from harm while you are on this boat. It has nothing to do with your peace of mind."
"If you can find her, you'll be well rewarded," said Vali, already knowing the berserk's answer.
"Where's the fame in that?" said Bjarki, and turned away.
Vali felt a strange exhilaration. This was the first real information he'd had on Adisla. He felt closer to her just hearing it. He looked around the ship. He saw some faces he recognized, but the rest were unknown to him. There were a couple of berserks, stripped to the waist in the hot day, their tattoos so thick that they seemed almost like fur. There were some warriors who looked like men of the Groa River, 10 days from Hordaland on foot. They wore the distinctive plaited beards of those people. So Forkbeard was using mercenaries. Was he preparing for war? Or was he just keeping his own men at home to defend his lands, while using hired warriors to settle his scores? The river men were not happy, Vali could see. Bragi and Felek had killed their friends, and only fear of Bodvar Bjarki kept them from revenge. As it was, they glowered at the pair, muttering threats under their breath, but keeping their distance. Bragi was unperturbed and met their gaze with a soft smile that told them he was ready any time they wanted to try their luck. Vali went to the back of the ship and sat with him.
Well? I don't know. Seems we're safe for the short term.
I meant, how are you? Said Vali. That was quite a smack he gave you.
I lost a couple of teeth, said Bragi, but I've had worse.
He raised his voice.
But then again, I'm used to fighting big men, not these skinny berserks.
Vali thought he actually saw Bodvar Bjarki laugh as he tied off a rope. Vali went back to the matter in hand.
What do you think we can do?
Bragi shrugged.
We can't sail the ship with two of us. If they're not going to kill us, I'd say we have to stick with them.
The moment we're in sight of land, we attack.
I have no weapon.
Tyr, god of battles, will provide.
He may provide an early death, said Vali.
I have lived a long time, said Bragi. I am not greedy for years, only fame.
There were around 60 men on the ship, two of them with axes ready and another three with spears guarding them, watching with expressions somewhere between anger and fear. Felix simply sat at the back of the boat, looking at his feet. Vali remembered that the wolfman hadn't liked travelling under sail, but didn't see how he could feel seasick in such a large, stable ship. He looked out. No land. He realized that they must have left Heithabir on the opposite course to the one they'd arrived on. They'd been taken to the town and transferred to another boat which had then doubled back. That was why their journey to the open sea had been so long. Bragi said the inlet from Hemming's court connected to the river Edjeren and out to the northern sea by a man-made channel. That was the route they had taken. They were, Vali guessed, navigating now by the sun and the stars, which gave them a good chance of getting lost. That was his best bet. If the ship lost its way and had to sit down on a strange coast, he might be able to escape. He sat back against a spar.
Sleep, if you like. I'll watch these bastards, said Bragi.
So Vali slept, or rather hovered uncomfortably between waking and sleeping. The sea fell to a dead calm, and the boat went on under oar for a while. In his semi-conscious condition, the rhythm of the rowing seemed like something animal, a heartbeat. His mind seemed to enter the beat, to be taken over by it, and then the cadence seemed to change subtly. It was no longer so slow and easy, but faster and more frenzied. He began to dream, or so he thought, and he saw Adisla and Felig and that strange rune. It seemed to pulse and move, to vibrate and thump, and he realized it wasn't the oars at all that were making the noise, but the rune. And it was not floating and incorporeal, as he had thought it to be, but was real, painted onto a surface. He breathed in and smelled hide and wood, a fire. The rune was shaking. It was painted on a drum. Someone was beating a drum with that horrid symbol on it. He looked through the rune, and he saw Adisla. But where was she? She was at the center of a circle of wild animals. Wolves, bears, stags, even a huge eagle. But then his mind cleared, and he saw them for what they were, men in animal masks. They were beating drums, drums peppered with that rune, which seemed to lift from the skins as they beat them, to go floating up through the night. He knew where they were going. Towards him. They seemed to sweep over him, enveloping him in a swarm. He had the sense that the men were showing him that they had her. They were calling him, even laying a trail for him to follow. There was another thing there, though, something old and hungry, something that prowled at the edge of his mind, watching. Its presence seemed like a blind shaft, a drop away into nothing, and the cold he felt from it was the same cold he had felt when Disa had worked her magic on him. The drumbeat filled up his mind. When he turned, he saw the man he had seen at the shield wall, tall and pale with a shock of red hair. "Help me find her," said Vali. "You will find her," he said, "and you will be lost. Welcome the sorcerer's gift. Your anger is now a gate for him, and he can hear it opening. Let these little ones in." He had picked up a fistful of those spiky runes and sprinkled them over Vali's head. "What does the drummer want from me?" "For you to know yourself." "Who am I?" The man held Vali in his arms and kissed him on the forehead. "Would you know?"
"I would know."
"Then, no." He was drowning again, the filthy water obscuring his sight, filling his lungs and choking his consciousness. The drums were thumping in his head, and above them he heard Yodis telling them to put him under. He saw himself in that chamber where the rune had been, knowing that it expressed himself, Adisla and Feleg, knowing they were inseparable. He realized what he had missed before. He hadn't seen where he was watching from. He felt a pain in his mouth like a pin, felt tight bonds about him, smelled blood and fire, and felt an anger of injustice boiling within him. He tried to speak his name, but all that came out was a howl of agony, a roar of injustice. He was the wolf.
"Get up! This is our chance! In the name of Thor's bulging nutsack, get up! What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you?"
It was Bragi's voice, shouting, urgent. Vali could also hear screams, men hurling obscenities and threats. He stood up. Something bizarre was happening. The merchant Velis came flapping past him, waving his arms almost as if he was swimming through the air. Then, with an unexpected turn of athleticism, he pulled himself up by one of the ropes that was securing the big barrels and leapt inside, quick as a rabbit into a hole. Vali looked around. A huge full moon turned the sea to crumpled metal, and no more than a bowshot away was a broad bank of thick fog almost glowing in the moonlight. There came the sound of rain, or something like it, and everyone scrambled for cover, cowering beneath shields or ducking under the longship's rail. He looked off to the side. Two drakkars, the real deal with carved dragon's heads, were upon them, showering their ship with thick black volleys of arrows. Where had they come from?
"Harik! Harik!" came the chant.
They were raiders from Agersborg. If Harik was on board, then Vali wanted his blood. There was a shore in sight under the bright moon. They had blundered too close to Harik's land and were paying the price. Still, Vali would welcome being captured by Harik, in a way. It would put him closer to Adisla. Logic, though, wasn't uppermost in his mind. Something else was gnawing away at him. What had the man in the feather cloak said to him? He couldn't think. His head was still resonating to the sound of those drums. Then all reason seemed to desert him. These attackers with the kin of the men who had stolen Adisla, killed little Manni, uprooted him from his home and the people he called family. Vali coughed. It was the same cough he'd had in the mire. His throat felt dry and tight, his head light, his ears seemed full of a throbbing beat. He couldn't order his thoughts, couldn't find direction.
Danes, Danes, Harik's men, thieves and murderers to be torn and wasted. Kill them all. None alive, none alive. My oath is murder to them. I tear and bite, bite and tear.
What was happening to him? Now he was shaking and coughing. Now he was freezing cold, just as he had been when Bragi had dragged him from the water of the drowning pool.
Pirates! Prince! It's now or never! We should bargain with them! This is our freedom!
It was Bragi, but Vali couldn't concentrate on what he was saying. His head was spinning. It was as if the reality he had experienced in his dream, the reality of the dark waters, had replaced that of the attack. Some archers in Vali's boat were returning fire, although most of Bjarki's men were still struggling to free their weapons from sea barrels. Vali seemed to move through a soup of stress and anger, as if the men leaked these things from them in their sweat. A draka came swiping past, its oars withdrawn, to broadside their own, snapping off oars and sending men tumbling to the bottom of the boat. Only three men were left standing, himself, Felek and Bodvar Bjarki, who was grinning and laughing behind his huge shield, a fine sword in his hand. Grappling hooks came into the ship. The war jabber was in his ears, the stink of fear all around him. He felt as if the room was hooked through his throat, pulling him up towards a terrible destiny. His blood pumped in his head like something was trying to burst from inside him. And then it did. A word that seemed more than a word, more like a vortex, a sucking piece of the night into which he would abandon himself.
Fenrisulfr!
It felt right. As if for the first time he was saying his name.
They tied me as they tied my father, he heard himself say. What are you talking about? We need to get to that ship.
It was Bragi.
I will lap their vital ichors. Prince, you're raving. At least lie down. You're going to be hit. Fenrisulfr!
Vali stepped towards the bouquet of the fight. It all seemed so delicious to him, the heavy sweats of fear and rage, and the blood, above all the blood, where the sweet arrow did its work, where the lovely sword cut and the pretty axe hewed.
The fetters have burst, he said.
And then the bloodmire took his mind. Chapter 35 A Wolf's Treat. Vali woke. He was in fog. It was day, and the mast cast long shadows into the air, like the rays of the sun coming behind a cloud, but streaking the fog with darkness, not light. The rays floated before him, a black web on grey, almost as if the creaks of the ship that broke the damp silence had been given visible expression. He looked down at his clothes, or what was left of them. They were torn and dark with blood. There was a taste in his mouth. Blood, too. He felt torpid and slow-witted, as you might after a heavy meal in the afternoon sun.
Bragi?
No answer. He had his hand on something soft. He looked to see what it was and screamed. It was a man, his rib cage torn away, his limbs broken, staring up from beneath him. Vali jumped to his feet. There was someone beside him. He started and was about to leap back. But there was no need. It was just his own shadow, a fog spectre cast by the sun, eerily solid. He looked about him. The boat was full of corpses, ripped and mutilated in the most horrible way. Dead eyes stared at him. Limbs reached for him. Entrails snaked at his feet. The smell of death filled up his nostrils. He staggered around, trying to get away from the dead men, but they were everywhere, from stern to prow. He ran in a crazy dance, lifting his knees high, as if attempting to float above the corpses. He felt a hand clutch at his shoulder, and he turned to see the wolfman looking back at him. Felek was gaunt and pale, and a long, deep cut ran from the top of his arm across his chest. Vali took a step back, tripped over a body and fell onto it. Repulsed, he tried to stand. The wolfman grasped him and pulled him to his feet.
"How long?" said Vali.
"A week," said the wolfman.
"I've been unconscious a week."
"Not unconscious," said the wolfman.
"Then what?"
The wolfman looked at the bodies.
"You?"
said Vali.
"Not me."
"Why didn't you throw them overboard?"
Felix stared into Vali's eyes.
"I was afraid of you," said the wolfman.
The explanation did not make sense to Vali. The wolfman was easily his better in a fight and could do what he liked.
"Why were you afraid of me?"
"You are a wolf," said the wolfman.
"I had to hide from you among these dead."
Vali could not grasp what Felek was saying. His head felt light, and the day, even under the fog, too bright. He looked at the bodies. They were Danes, around 20 of them, and none had any signs of arrow strikes or sword cuts. Rather, their wounds were ragged and torn. One man had half his face ripped away, and it looked more as if he had been attacked by a wild animal than killed in battle. Vali couldn't bear the corpses staring at him in that unnatural light any longer. He spent a few moments steeling himself, and then began to tip them overboard into the sea, removing any swords and purses before he did so. The work was long, and it was hard. Vali felt exhausted, and had to take frequent breaks, as his distaste for what he was doing became too much. Felix's wound pained him, and he was little help. The fog began to clear, and birds to descend. Mainly gulls, but crows too. The sight of the crows gave Vali hope. They weren't far from land. Still, he made some effort to shoo them away. Had the birds mutilated the corpses before flying off as the boat slid into the fog? Felek helped him lift a stout Dane up to the shield rail. The man was much heavier than he looked, and it was a terrible heave to get him there. They propped him for a moment to recover their breath, the corpse leaning over the side like someone seasick rather than dead. And then Vali realized what had happened.
"You did this to them, didn't you?"
he said.
"You did this evil thing."
The wolfman looked at him without expression.
"Prince," he said, "you must not talk to me like that. For you ate a wolf's treat."
"Have you taken to talking in riddles, Felek? Our human company has had a corrupting effect on you. Say what you mean plainly."
The wolfman said nothing. The Dane had clearly been decomposing for some time. As they lifted his legs over the side, his stomach split, enveloping Vali in a cloud of corpse gas. He retched. The man slid into the water, and Vali shuddered, wiping away the vomit. There was a strange metallic taste in his mouth. Not unpleasant at all, he thought. He looked at his hand, and then down to his boots, where he had been sick. More blood. Instinctively, he felt his sides, his arms and legs. He hadn't been wounded, but still he was retching blood. The wolfman continued to watch him without expression. When the last body was gone, Vali sat down, opened a sea chest, and took out a skin of wine, drinking deeply. It tasted odd. Unpleasant, even. He concluded it was off. Why would a man take bad wine on a trip? He tried another, That was off, too, as was a skin of beer. It tasted repulsive, undrinkable. Finally, he found a skin with water in it and drank from that. It tasted much better, though he was now aware of other scents, suggestions of things he couldn't name, but that made him think of the death throes of the animal which had been used to make the skin. He perceived something else as he drank. More than a taste, a sense of who had used the skin before. It had been drunk from just before the battle commenced. There was the sweat of anxiety on it. And then he realized that beneath the salt of the sea, the smell of the wet boards and the ropes, he could smell a thousand other notes. Grass, loam, reindeer, trees, drying sand and seaweed. Even a smell so familiar and powerful it almost made him laugh. Wet dog. In his mind, Vali saw Disa driving Hop away from the fire, saying they'd be having roast dog for dinner if he sat any closer. He breathed in and knew they were near land. Vali looked out but could see nothing. He could tell by the scent of pine needles that the nearest land lay to his east, away from where the sun was throwing its fog shadows. The ship was caught in a current and was far too big for him to sail, but he took the rudder and tried to steer it that way. The wolfman just kept looking at him. Vali's thoughts had been disordered by the corpses and his long unconsciousness. As they began to come back to normality, he realized he had forgotten to ask a very important question. "Do you know what happened to Bragi?" he said. "Yes," said the wolfman. "What?" "You killed him." Chapter 36. The Blood Mire. Vali did not, as Felek did, remember the attack. Nor did he remember the huge moon reducing the world to silver and black, lines and a circle. The Drakars had come upon them quietly from the fog bank. Felek thought the ambush must have been directed by a sorcerer who was working for the pirates. How else would Bodvar Bjarki's ship have been spotted at night and through such fog? He didn't know that magic was involved, though with a bigger ambition than plunder. In the caves of the Troll Wall, the witch was working to speed him to his destiny, and on the flat rock of his island, the northern sorcerer sat entranced for a week, beating his drum and chanting his chants to bring Vali to him. So the Danish warlord had found himself unable to sleep that night. The inside of his longhouse seemed unbearably stuffy, and he had gone outside for some air. Looking out over the sea, he had seen a movement. It was a squall of starlings wheeling against the big moon, turning and vanishing. It was then that he'd seen the Draka out towards the horizon, skirting an incoming fog. It was potentially dangerous to set sail in such weather, but the temptation was too great. His men had not needed rousing. A mob of them were at his door before he had picked up his spear. They too had found no comfort in their beds that night, and had seen the enemy vessel. Two ships were crewed and launched before the fog had moved a boat length. The attackers had lost sight of their prey in the fog, but had been guided by the slow beat of Bjarki's oars through the murk. Both Danish ships had matched that rhythm to hide the sound of their own approach. From within the white world of the fog, the voices of the men on the target boat, Vali's conversation with Bragi even, would have sounded loud and close by. Leading up to the attack, Bjarki, noted the wolfman, had been nervous. The fog was approaching, and the berserk headed out to sea to keep clear of any sandbanks or rocks. Felek remembered Bjarki suddenly freezing and telling the rowers to be still and silent. They'd heard it then, the straining of the pirate oarsmen as they rowed, the exhalation of effort mingling with the sound of the oars in the water, like the wet breath of a dying giant.
Weapons! Bodvar had shouted. Weapons! And the men had scrambled to their barrels and chests. Warhorns had announced the attack, followed in a heartbeat by arrows. The bowmen were not accurate, shooting from one moving ship at another, but they had caused panic, the warriors stumbling and cursing as they fought to be first to their spears. In the attack, the distinction between captive and captor melted away, and Vali, Bragi, and Felek were free to act. Bragi had been screaming at Felek, really bellowing, "Get yourself a shield! If you want to live, get yourself a shield!" He had also been trying to rouse Vali, who seemed to be in a trance. Felek could not yet see the attackers, though a couple of arrows skidding on the boards next to him told him they could see him. He ducked down as some of the other men were doing. Bragi was shouting at Vali, begging him to wake up. A gust of air enveloped them in fog, and for an instant Felek thought they were hidden. But then there was a thump on the ship, so hard it almost felt as though he himself had been struck. A rattle and a crunching as their oars were sheared away, and screams of exultation as the Danes leapt aboard. The prince stood, seemingly in the grip of madness, muttering to himself, and staggering as if drunk. Three Danes jumped down, but one was impaled by Bragi's sword before his feet even touched the boards, and he collapsed into the other two. There was an insane scramble on the bottom of the boat as Bragi left his sword in the Dane's body and found his knife for the close work. The Danes were armed with axes, but with Bragi on top of them in a pile, had no way to swing them. He gutted the first in an instant. The second tried to get up, but Felek drove a powerful kick into his head and leapt on him, tearing with his nails and teeth. Bragi was on his feet. He sheathed his knife and regained his sword. Then he leapt into the press of the fight, slashing, striking with his pommel, kicking, biting and punching. Bodvar Bjarki was an impressive sight, blocking with his shield, hacking with his sword, driving in with his knees and head. He was fighting three men at once, and it was they who were giving ground.
"Odin! Odin! Odin!"
he was screaming. He was so big that Felek was reminded of when he'd played with his father as a child, leaping on him, being thrown away and leaping on again. Other Danes appeared next to Felek, and for a time he lost all sense of anything but his own preservation. Faces came at him, weapons blurred. He dodged, struck and bit, broke limbs, tore eyes from their sockets, and stamped on his fallen enemies. There was another massive crunch, the air filled with splinters, and he fought to retain his balance. A second ship had sheared their oars away on the other side. The fighting happened in waves. Men would engage, fight, prevail or die, then part to stand shouting insults at each other and looking for openings before clashing again. Bragi was howling,
"We are nobles of the Horda, and much gold will you win for our safe return."
But it was useless. The Danes were set on killing them. One came at Bragi, two, then three. The shield he had taken up had been reduced to smithereens, and he was fighting with just the iron boss, punching out with it and hacking with his sword. Someone struck him to the face, cutting away part of his chin, but the Jarl just shoved his beard into his mouth to secure his dangling flesh. Four were on him, five. Two Danes confronted Felig, and he couldn't reach Bragi. Everything changed when someone struck at the prince. Felig saw an axe swing towards Vali's head, but then the axe was flying through the air, and the man who had been holding it was clutching his throat and screaming. Felek saw Vali plunge into the Danes, and the rhythm of the battle changed. The ebb and flow became a flood tide, an unstoppable, immense surge that pushed the Danes back, smashed them down, and tore them to nothing. Vali's speed was breathtaking, and his strength even more so. He reached Bragi, who was almost dead on his feet.
The first Dane had his neck broken as Vali took his head in both hands and twisted. The next was simply battered into the sea. Bragi struck the third with his sword to the shoulder, and Vali leapt on him, the two going down together. The last two no longer liked the odds and retreated onto their ship. Bragi scanned for enemies, straightened his bent sword under his foot against a timber, and slid his knife into his belt. That done, he put his hand up to the flap of skin at his chin and called out to Vali behind him.
"Well, you remembered something I taught you, though you did a good enough job of hiding it for long enough. I..."
Felek watched as Bragi looked at the prince. Vali was kneeling beside one of the fallen men, chewing into the flesh of his face and trying to rip the meat from the bone with his teeth.
"Prince, I..."
Bragi put his hand on Vali's shoulder. Vali gave a boiling growl.
"Prince," said Bragi, "you are bewitched. Prince, friend, please."
He never finished his sentence. Vali stood and in the same movement threw Bragi onto his back. Then he was on him, biting at him, tearing his skin, punching and kicking. Felix saw the old man's head loll as Vali poured in blow after blow. But Bragi was a formidable fighter and responded with blows of his own. The two men rose, locked together, crashed back over the rail of the ship, fell into the enemy vessel and rolled apart. Danes surrounded them. 4, 5, 6 men tore into the pair, attacks coming in from all sides. Vali lost his footing. Axes and spears were raised, but Bragi got free of his opponent and charged headlong at Vali's attackers, driving 3 of them to the boards. Bragi lost his sword and much of his hand to an axe, but Vali broke the axeman's neck with a blow to the head. Bragi went down, locked to an opponent. They broke, shoving each other away as they stood, but the Dane had snatched the old warrior's knife from his belt. Bragi reacted immediately, driving his head forward into the man's face, sending his opponent crashing over the rail of the ship into the sea. Vali seemed to catch the idea. He tossed 2 men over the rail into the water and turned to face the rest. The Danes fell back, a half circle of them around Bragi and Vali, too scared to come on, but with nowhere to retreat to. Bragi was unarmed, all his weapons gone in the fight, and his right hand a bloody ruin, as was his face. He smiled at the prince.
"All my life I've dreamed of doing this with you. You're a great scrapper, as long as you concentrate on the enemy. But you want to watch those berserker mushrooms?"
Vali swayed uncertainly in front of him. Bragi put a hand on his shoulder.
"I'm proud of you, Lord. You're a mighty man, and it does my heart good to see a fight like that. I'd have lost my hand before if I'd known it would have that effect on you."
And Vali took him, leaping on him like a wild animal and tearing out his throat with his teeth. Bragi instinctively reached for his sword with his bloody hand and for his knife with his good one, but they were gone. He staggered back, his blood engulfing him and engulfing the prince. Vali shoved him to the deck, where the old man lay writhing, his hands tearing at his belt for the weapons that were no longer there. The Danes around them seemed to decide as one they wouldn't take on Vali, and scrambled onto Bodvar Bjarki's crippled ship. The pirates on the other ship took this for a renewed attack and came pouring over in numbers themselves. Felek fought hard and lost track of time. Then he saw Vali leap back onto the centre boat with a terrible snarl. Some of the Danes seemed transfixed, stopping as if turned to stone. Felek had heard his father tell stories of this, the battle fetter, where Odin descends and strikes the enemy motionless. Others, though, were not affected and came forward to meet Vali. The fighting was terrible. Men lost their footing and were stabbed or trampled on the blood-slick boards. Friend struck friend in the confusion, but Vali seemed untouchable. Opponents fell back from him as if blasted by a gale, pushing back to